Welcome to the Holistic Psychiatrist Podcast, a place for inspiration, insight, and information on holistic mental health. Join your host, Dr. Alice Lee, and discover critical information on safe, effective psychiatric medication withdrawal. Explore new ideas that enlighten and expand the mind with cutting-edge authors and experts, along with former patients as they share their miraculous healing journeys. It's time to build your well-being from the thought up. It's time for the Holistic Psychiatrist Podcast. Here's your host, Dr. Alice Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Holistic Psychiatrist Podcast, where building well-being from the thought up creates miraculous healing journeys. I'm your host, Dr. Alice Lee, the Holistic Psychiatrist practicing in Lehi, Utah. Today, I'm excited to introduce to you Dr. Felix Liao. He's a biological dentist practicing in Virginia. To contact him, he's on the website under wholehealthdentalcenter.com. His telephone number is 703-385-6425. So biological dentistry is the holistic approach to dentistry that is revolutionizing the role of dentistry in health and well-being. How does the health of the mouth influence mental health? Dr. Felix Liao will be explaining this important relationship. He is a certified biological dentist in the International Academy of Biological Dentistry and Medicine. He was the president of that organization from 2015 to 2017 and has his mastership in the Academy of Dentistry and is board certified by the American Board of General Dentistry. He's the author of the book, 6 Foot Tiger, 3 Foot Cage, Take Charge of Your Health by Taking Charge of Your Mouth, another book called Early Sirens, and also License to Thrive, Mouth Owner's GPS to Vibrant Health and Innate Immunity. He's also the director of the AMD program, which stands for the Airway-Centered Mouth Doctor, since 2017. Welcome, Dr. Liao. Thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alice. I appreciate the work you do.
Oh, thank you very much. I want to get right into your experience in holistic dentistry and ask you to share with us your experience as a dentist and how you got into biological dentistry.
I had a vacation once, and on day one, I sprained my ankle and I was laid up with my feet up and not able to go anywhere. So I decided to start writing a book about the mouth role in whole body health. This was back in the middle 90s. You know, I was a rookie author's attempt, and I went about it, finishing the entire manuscript, turned it over to a patient of mine who practices Zen Buddhism, because I had introduced a lot of Oriental philosophy in there, being from Taiwan myself. After he finished reading that, he said, "Felix, I want you to meet Dr. Thomas Rau from Switzerland. He's a European biological medicine doctor. He will be coming to Marion, Massachusetts, and I think the two absolutely must meet." So I was twisted into going to see Dr. Rau, and I never looked back since. Dr. Rau's approach is that as an MD, he practices with the patient's panoramic dental x-ray on his desk as part of his diagnostic workup. And that his Paracelsus clinic in Switzerland has a dental wing built in. And after the initial diagnostic testing and consultation, the patient goes to get the mouth cleaned up first, free of inflammation, infection, and other toxins, so that the body is fit to treat medically. So from there, I never looked back. It was like, this is how the body is organized from the top down. And the mouth is part of the head. The mouth is the visceral cranium. That means the part of the head that is devoted to connecting the brain with the mouth. So it makes sense that the mouth is the top of the digestive tract, And therefore, it should be clean, it should be free of infections, and it should be free of toxins.
It sounds like on your vacation that you were already thinking as a holistic dentist at that time.
Yes. I was curious about the mouth role in whole body health at that time. Yes.
At the time, I guess you were practicing as a regular dentist. And now that you're a biological dentist, there might have been a lot of changes that you were introduced to at the very beginning. And I was wondering if you can share what kind of things you now do differently that was kind of taken for granted as part of regular dentistry back then in your practice?
Great question. So right off the bat, toxic metals was a factor. The dental battery from mixed metals that in saliva produces galvanic current. That means you make a battery with different metals. You get gold, you have silver, you have mercury, you have tin, copper, and zinc, all in the same mouth, you can produce a battery-like effect. And with the mouth being just inches from the brain, the order of magnitudes is in the thousands. So the brain runs on nanovolts, and the dental battery runs in millivolts, sometimes several hundreds. That was one. And the other one was root canals. Chronic infections, just not tolerated Paracelsus Clinic. And they've been able to show substantial success with all kinds of chronic illnesses by cleaning up the mouth, free of heavy metals and free of dental infections. And also they were very big on what's called jaw cavitations. That's incomplete jaw healing after an extraction, particularly in the wisdom teeth area. So area becomes an area of chronic necrosis. That means an area of dead tissue that just does not heal.
A lot of people don't really understand what might be not so healthy about having metal fillings. It wasn't long ago that people had metal fillings as a routine part of treatment for cavities. So can you tell us a little bit more about metal fillings? If they are so harmful, why did dentists use them in the first place? And to what extent are they toxic to the body?
So I have to say, I'm not the best expert to answer that fine question. I will refer you to a book written by a brilliant cardiologist, Thomas E. Levy, L-E-V-Y, who both a MD and a doctor of jurisprudence, a lawyer. He wrote a book called Hidden Epidemic. It's about the toxic waste dump in certain mouths that contribute to America's leading diseases. So the book is called Hidden Epidemic.
My understanding is that with the metal fillings, over 50% of the metal often is made out of mercury. Is that right?
Yes. And the mercury can leach out over time.
And when you say that the metals in the mouth can form a battery, I don't quite understand what that means. Do you mean it's generating electrical current going on in the mouth?
It could generate a battery-like effect. So you wouldn't choose to camp out under a high-tension tower or build a house next to an electrical substation, right? Why would you put a dental battery directly under your brain? So a lot of people could sleep better as soon as we remove the dental battery, for example. A lot of times their fatigue starts to improve. Sometimes shyness goes away. I have not been practicing this kind of dentistry for probably 15 years now. So there may be some other changes, but that's been my experience, is that generally most people feel no particular difference except that they do feel like a sense of well-being. However, people who are going to have heavy metal chelation treatment, they are recommended to have the metals in the mouth removed first. But here's the most important part. Even though I don't do this work for the last 10 years, it's really important to remove any heavy metal in your mouth, including so-called silver fillings. They're actually mercury-containing fillings you must get them removed safely. And safe mercury removal is more important than trying to get your mouth clean indiscriminately, meaning that without necessary and extensive precautions on how to do it right, the dentist's office must treat mercury removal as if it's a biohazard. So in high school, if some kid spilled mercury, they shut down the whole school. So why is it that it's okay to leave mercury filling in the mouth?
That's right? A good question.
Right? There was a lot of controversy and resistance on the part of the establishment, and many license actions against certain biological dentists have been taken.
Well, you said that that was 10 years ago when you did that kind of dentistry. So why don't you fill us in and what's new in your practice and what you're doing right now that is very important to you and your work?
So what I found is that mental health obviously pertains to the health and functions of the brain. And there's no organ in the body that's more oxygen dependent, more sleep dependent than the brain. So it turns out the mouth and the brain is basically sharing the same physical address. And through these functions, sleep and breathing and alignment and circulation and digestion, the gut-brain axis. So it turns out that the mouth is to the entire human body what roots are to plants. So if we put toxic things in the mouth and leave it there, such as a dental battery, for example, or if you have what I call 6-foot tiger, 3-foot cage, that's the title of my first book. The 6-foot tiger refers to an oversized tongue, and the 3-foot cage refers to an undersized set of jaws, in between which the tongue is supposed to fit. Clearly, there's going to be a problem, because if their tongue does not have enough room to stay in the mouth, it ends up in the throat, occupying airway, and the patient becomes oxygen deprived, particularly during sleep.
So that's really interesting that you're studying about the mouth and the way the tongue fits in the mouth, the way airway is relevant, and all of its interactions in terms of creating that airway for the brain. Can you tell us some experiences of how, well, first of all, how do you treat someone who has a bad airway because of their mouth or oral cavity not being sufficient? And maybe share some stories about some of the patients that you've worked with and how making those interventions might have made a difference in their mental health.
Sure. So in the body, there are really no departmental lines, right? So the mind and the body and the mouth, there are no lines painted anywhere inside the body. So all the systems are perfectly coordinated and seamlessly interconnected. So that's the first thing to recognize, is that although we label it as mental health, really the body operates as a functional whole. And we're simply trying to say, okay, from the bureaucratic regulator standpoint, this is your turf, that's my turf. But the body doesn't operate that way. So when you have a bad night's sleep, every part of your body suffers. So for example, brain fog or anxiety and depression or learning or disability, or when I'm talking about disability, I mean like learning style. So if the same person, same brain, has a bad night's sleep, whatever I just said tonight is not going to be retained nearly as well tomorrow morning. When you have a tongue that is a 6-foot tiger and a set of jaws that's a 3-foot cage, your airway is obstructed because the tongue has no place to stay in the mouth and shades into the airway. When the body in general and the brain in particular is oxygen deprived, it's really easy for the brain to be just a few percentage points apart. And it only takes 4 percentage points of oxygen drop for sleep apnea to be defined as a apnea or hypoapnea. means that you have less breathing than optimal. All right. So that's the tolerance that we're working with. It turns out that if your jaws are about 7 to 10% too narrow, too short, too underdeveloped, that's enough to produce sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea in particular. So apnea means absence of breathing because something is collapsed, meaning the airway behind your soft palate or behind your tongue has collapsed, as if you were trying to suck milkshake through a straw. It's got a kink in it. The whole thing just collapses. When that happens, there's an oxygen deprivation. I was fortunate. I worked in a hospital to help my way through dental school on weekends for 3 years. I was a lab technician. I drove the bot, I run the blood test, and I participated in ER and OR activities. So I was very familiar with the crash cart, the paddle, and the EmbryBag that resuscitates the patients. So it turns out that teeth grinding is just a way for the body to resuscitate itself in the middle of sleep, because the body craves sleep, because that's essential for life and health. And yet you have airway obstruction. What does the body do? It had to choose, okay, resuscitate me, saying, how do you do that? Or you sacrifice teeth, right? So the way you resuscitate someone is you extend the neck and you thrust the jaw forward, pull the tongue out of the throat. That's how you open up the airway before you do the mouth and mouth. So the body uses that first part where it thrusts the jaw forward. And the jaw is thrusted forward. The teeth are in the way, but you got a fire to put out. It's either oxygen or death. So you can't worry about teeth. Teeth grinders, what I find is that they often have anxiety. They often have depression. They often have fatigue. They often have brain fog. They often have aches and pains. They often have moodiness. And this is all the side effects, airway obstruction and oxygen deprivation. So the brain being particularly sensitive, it's very common. I would say 1/3 of my patients have mental symptoms. And when they can sleep better, when they don't have to fight airway obstruction by wearing a mouthpiece, and these are not any kind of mouthpiece. We'll talk about that separately. These are epigenetic oral appliances. We can talk about just a little bit. The effect of opening up the airway makes all those symptoms go away. What they found in sleep apnea research using CPAP is that teeth grinding stops when you titrate or when you restore the oxygen supply to the body, then the body stops grinding.
I have a question about the tongue because I just heard recently from a clinician about tongue tie, that some people have the tongue tie and that it's helpful to clip the tongue tie. What is your opinion about that for the tongue?
Okay, so tongue tie contributes to the 3/4 cage. So tongue tie is a result of incomplete resorption. So we end up with 5 fingers because we used to be webbed between all the fingers. And that's a resorptive process. And that's part of the development so that this web shrinks. And the tongue tie is the same way. You need shrinkage. It's called apoptosis, medically speaking. And apoptosis is programmed in genetically during the temporal spatial development of the fetus. This biochemistry mediated process is temperature dependent. This is my speculation. I don't have any study for it, but if body temperature is low, as in maternal hypothyroidism, then the tongue tie resorption is going to be less complete. And that's how tongue tie comes about. This is my speculation. Because how else do you slow down apoptosis except by temperature? So that to me is the most logical. So anyway, but tongue tie, what happens is that in severe cases, the baby cannot feed. The latch to the breast falls off. And the baby's crying and everybody's exhausted. So that is easy to diagnose. And clearly you clip it in the hospital and the baby go right back to nursing and develop pneumonia. Because breastfeeding requires the tongue to trap the nipple against the palate, and that's how you milk the breast. So this provides a stimulation to the palate so that the palate starts developing from the breastfeeding. Mother's milk, no question, the most great sacred food there is. But there's a developmental benefit. The maxilla should be better developed than the mandible. A well-developed maxilla gives a high cheekbone. Okay? It gives a good-looking face. A underdeveloped maxilla, as a result of tongue tie anchoring the tongue to the floor of the mouth, ends up being low cheekbone, narrow palate, and high palatal fold and crowded teeth. So this is the reason why you want to pay attention to the tongue tie. Most of the time, the tongue tie is more in the gray zone, not the severe type, and not the normal type, it's somewhere in between. And that's why people end up with varying degrees of crowding as a result of understimulation of the palate by the tongue. When we swallow, we should swallow with the palate up against the tongue. So say uncle, make that sound now. That's a part of the tongue that should be against the roof of the mouth when you swallow. A lot of people, when they swallow, they gurgle. You listen to people drink and you hear the gurgling sound. Those are signs of tongue tie. People who swallow with a grimace so that you see all kinds of lines show up around the mouth. Like the way I used to swallow, and you have lots of lines showing up like that. And so a lot of older people, you see all these lines around the mouth etched into their faces. It's because they have tongue tie. Turn tie driven reaction to swallow incorrectly. So the correct way to swallow is that there is no grimace and only the thyroid cartilage moves and there's no sound. 3 foot cage comes about as a result of tongue tie.
That is interesting. Can you share some interesting stories of people that you've worked with currently and the connection between your intervention and some of the mental health changes that they've noticed?
Absolutely. The most common one is anxiety and depression. People who had lisps went to speech therapy because the tongue escapes. I had a patient like that. Her jaw was narrow. She had braces then, and yet they crowded up again, and the gap opened up between the front teeth. So once we instituted this program, she came back and said, what anxiety? So that's a simple non-drug approach. Because if you think about it, what's the greatest stress to the body? If there's a chokehold, that would make you anxious. If you go to bed and your subconscious knows that it has to confront death night after night in your sleep, over the years, you'll become anxious without knowing why. Very often people will report, oh, my brain fog is gone. I don't have to write notes to myself so much now. So if you catch the patient early, in the early part of downhill slide, you can reverse the cognitive decline before it becomes dementia. Important nutrient. No, people don't think of oxygen as a nutrient, but to the brain,
right. So if I were to look at a patient and I'm looking at their face and trying to see if they need to have a visit to a biological dentist, one of the things I'm looking for is a very narrow jaw, right?
Yes. Crowded teeth, narrow jaws, people who are lips apart. So they're habitual mouth breathers. So people who are habitual mouth breathers, they need to be putting chapsticks on their lips all the time. They need to drink the water because they're always thirsty because their mouth is open. People, when you're observing them, the best way, in my experience, there are two physical signs. One is just through observation. This is called Liao sign. If you look at a patient in profile, look at the upper lip. There should be an angle from the base of the nose outward. If it drops straight down, it will result in the vermilion, the pink part of the lip being inverted, they would have very thin pencil line like lips. These people have airway trouble. Worse yet, if they're in profile, the lip is curled. That means that there's not enough bony structure to support the lip as a soft tissue. So when the maxilla is retruded, the mandible has to fit into the maxilla, then it's also retruded. So retruded maxilla is a big problem. And this lip sign called Liao sign means that it drops straight down in profile is a pretty reliable indicator.
What about patients with almost like no chin? Like, let's say their chin is almost very small compared to the shape of the face. What does that say about airway?
Yes, weak chin always blocks the airway because the tongue is also driven into the throat. So weak chin is the result of a narrow upper jaw that failed to thrive during the childhood developmental years. I used to have a weak chin, and once I developed my jaw, my mandible is able to come more forward.
So you're saying that even though a person might be born with a certain facial bone structure, that dentists in the field of biological dentists can literally change the shape of the jaw?
To the extent that this is built into your double helix DNA. Every one of us is encoded for enough jaw bone volume for all the teeth to line up straight. If you come from the Habsburg family, very famous Austro-Hungarian empire, where they would just have this kind of nose, we can't change that. Because doctors basically bring out the genes that are inherent in your cells. So that aside, we can pretty much normalize most people, provided that they have enough healthy teeth. So this is called epigenetic development. And by the way, this is not necessarily a biological dentist function. This is a additional training for all dentists who want to take up airway mouth doctor training. So not all biological dentists are airway mouth doctors. All the biological dentists are trained to remove mercury amalgam safely and protect the patient and the office personnel. They are trained to look at the mouth and the teeth in a way that is consistent with whole body health, but not necessarily on the airway and the jaw development and the facial appearance.
What would be a good website for people who are looking for a dentist who is aware of airway-centered mouth healing that they can go to as a resource?
Right now, there is not a national association or academy. We are just in the very early beginning of growing number of airway center mouth doctors called AMDs. And the website is called holisticmouthsolutions.com. Right now, this website is only geared for healthcare professionals. In time, we will build one that is more suited for lay people. In the meantime, the best guidance I can give you is my latest book called License to Thrive.
You said it was holisticmouthsolutions.com? Well, I can think of one patient right now off the top of my head. I'm already thinking about her airway already. So I think that this interview so far has been very helpful for me. What about aging patients? You know, there's this assumption that as you get older, you're going to lose your teeth, you're going to have dentures, and that's the typical kind of scenario for older people. What advice do you have for people who are getting older? Are there things that biological dentists know that regular dentists don't?
Clearly, if you don't have a good airway, you don't have good sleep, you don't have good repair, you can't renew. So that's a steeper downhill slide. Your airway health is driven by your jaw development, jaw competence. if you have, for example, hypothyroidism or low thyroid function, then you will, one, gain weight, two, have puffiness to your body, be it in the calf or in your tongue. And this puffiness is going to turn your tongue into an 8-foot tiger in a 3-foot cage. Right? That'll make it even more aggravated. So general health, functional medicine, and a functional mouth are absolutely the most important thing. I'll give you another reason. When you grind your teeth, that's the fastest way to destroy your teeth. So biological dentist or conventional dentist or any other type of dentist, you want to start with fully developed jaws so that you don't have this airway obstruction problem that requires you to compensate with teeth grinding and talking.
That's very good advice. For older patients, how do you, beyond the thyroid and taking care of their overall health, are there specific things to teeth? Are there specific toothpastes? Are there specific products that you would recommend that would help the teeth to remain healthy longer? For example, do you recommend some of these toothpastes out there that has antibacterial properties, for example, that helps decrease bacteria in the oral cavities?
Personally, I ran an experiment on myself. I did not brush with any toothpaste for 30 years. I did not get an extra single cavity from that. So I'm sorry, toothpaste manufacturers. The more important thing is your airway and your nutrition. I have since designed my own appliance, and I pair the appliance for the first time ever in the history of dentistry with a bone building diet. I believe that if you give the body what it needs, it will thrive. That is true of your gut, your brain, and your jaw and your teeth. I've reduced this bone building diet down to two very simple things. One is bone broth. Bone broth is soup made from animal carcass, minerals from there, as well as the collagen from the animal bones, become precursors for the body to renew itself, the connective tissue ligaments that contribute to aches and pains and all of that stuff. But more importantly, the collagen and the gelatin in the bone broth help heal leaky gut, which is the basis of so much autoimmune disease and so much aches and pains and fatigue. I believe a healthy diet, which again is a mouth function, is the most important thing. And the other part of this bone building diet is what I call green smoothies. So it's basically using a blender to make your own VA juice at home. Now, whatever fresh vegetables, and if you want to sweeten it with a little bit of fruit, like half a banana, fine. If you want to add a little strawberry with a little organic chocolate baking powder, even kids love this. So a bone building diet to me is one, alkalizing, and two, it helps your body with ingredients to renew itself. So this is much, much more important than any sort of topical manipulation like mouthwash, like toothpaste, because your blood supply carrying the goodies, it means a whole lot more to the cells inside the tooth and around it.
You know, we've covered a lot of important topics about metals in your mouth, airway obstruction, the need for the brain to have oxygen. Is there any last important points that we've forgotten that you would like to bring up in our podcast?
Yes, I think chronic pain and fatigue is a major aggravator for a lot of people that reduces their quality of life, and it contributes to escape behavior, such as caffeine, sweets, munching, and therefore COVID-19 stands for 19 pounds gained rather than the year in which this virus 3 years exactly hit, right? What I found in a nutshell is that when the jaws are misaligned, underdeveloped, and you have bunched up teeth, it contributes frequently, like better than 90% of the time, to aches and pains, whether it's in the neck, in the jaws, in the teeth, in terms of persistent dental sensitivity. For example, somebody had a root canal done and the tooth still bothers them. They had the teeth taken out and the implant still bothers them. This is a result of the bigger picture not being looked at. When the trees are looked at, but the forest is forgotten. What I found is that when the jaw is redeveloped and the bite is realigned, then the neck and shoulder pain and back pain and hand pain, and knee pain goes away. To the extent that there's an oral contribution to those pain. If you had a ski accident, if you flipped over your bicycle handlebar, that's beyond oral contribution. But what I found is that nearly 90% of the pain could be having a oral contribution to that. So this redevelopment of the jaws has many benefits, and you as an expert in mental health would know how pain comes into this picture. Chronic. Yeah.
Thank you for that. That's really helpful for me to know, because sometimes when we think about pain, we don't often just think about the mouth and the oral cavity.
Right. A very simple thing is to take a tongue blade, put it between the teeth, and see whether or not the pinky test becomes negative. So when you put a pinky in the patient's ears, pat facing forward so they can feel the jaw joint, and have the patient bite together, and you feel the pushback. That means the jaw's retruded, the mandible's retruded, and the tongue is in the throat. And so the airway is compromised. We call that pinky test positive. Then you put a tongue blade between the upper and lower front teeth and you have the patient just tell them to close. And you check this again and it's negative. Now we've solved the problem. You free the body of this monkey wrench called mandibular entrapment. And with it, the tongue in the throat. And when you find that and refer to it, my doctor who knows how to treat this, they will thank you for getting them out of here. Because this is how you can simply, in the battlefield, using a very low-tech method, diagnose and figure out that, okay, this pain has an oral contribution to it. So many of my patients are walking better right away. Many of them, their pelvic wobble becomes much less. And some of the low back pain just goes away right there.
Mm-hmm. So the pinky test is you put a pinky in your ear and
pat facing forward.
Yeah. You put a pinky in your ear, and the first time when you see the bone push against it, you're not having the, what do you call it?
Tongue blade.
Oh, the
tongue blade.
Yeah, the first time you don't have the tongue blade. And what are you doing to cause the bone to push against the pinky?
You have the patient bite their back teeth together.
Oh, the back teeth together. Okay. And if you bite the back teeth together and you feel that bone pushing against the pinky, then that's a positive test.
Right.
And then if you put the tongue blade between the front teeth, and then do they have to bite their back teeth together again with a tongue blade?
They'll end up closing on the tongue blade.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, like in a dinner party, I'll have them pick out their sunglasses or their glasses. And just bite on this. Then you have freed the body of the effect of retruded mandible. And you free the patient of the airway obstruction.
Okay.
And soon as you do that, a lot of the pain starts to fade. Very quickly or noticeably, or the gait changes.
Mm-hmm. So when you put the pinky in the ear and you have the tongue blade there and you just kind of biting down on the tongue blade, if it's negative with regard to the mandible bone pressing against the pinky, then that means that you've resolved that problem. Okay, excellent. Well, we definitely need to learn about checking that in our patients, and hopefully other people will try it after they've listened to our podcast. I want to really thank you for your time today and sharing your wisdom and all of the wonderful insights that you have about the connection between the oxygenation that's flowing through our bodies and the way our oral cavities function in allowing that to happen, and how oxygenation and the oral cavities can have a real impact on brain fog, on pain, and on anxiety and depression. So I believe after our podcast, I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on people's facial structures. Then hopefully I'll be able to refer them to the right doctors who have that special training with airway. You call it the airway-centered mouth doctors, right?
Yeah. And so just a little note of caution. This is brand new. My first book came out in 2017. So you may have to refer your dentist to Holistic Mouth Solutions website because you will be clueless if he's being a traditional dentist, meaning tooth-centered dentist, all his career or her career.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So for that, of course, the clinicians need to go to holisticmouthsolutions.com. Yes. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I have really enjoyed our discussion, and I hope that our listeners have learned a lot of helpful information for them. If they feel that they know someone or that they themselves might have some airway problems because of the way their jaws are formed, now they will have a way to address it because of our discussion. So I really want to thank you for your time, and I want to let other people know again about how to reach you. So if they wanted to contact you, they can go to your website called wholehealthdentalcenter.com. Again, that's wholehealthdentalcenter.com. And your telephone number is 703-385-6425. If they want to learn more about airway-centered mouth doctors, they go to holisticmouthsolutions.com. Thank you so much for agreeing to this interview.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alice. I greatly appreciate your contribution to your patient health and well-being.
So for those of you who have enjoyed today's content, as I have, please subscribe to this weekly podcast for more informative insights on holistic psychiatry and other areas that are important to the healing of the mind. Also, please subscribe to my weekly updates on my website, holisticpsychiatrist.com. for wonderful stories and developments from my holistic practice, and where you'll find links to all my social media platforms. Until then, let's keep building our well-being from the thought up, and have a wonderful, joyful week.
The content provided by this podcast is for informational purposes only and has not been approved by the US FDA. This podcast is not intended to provide personal medical advice, which should be obtained from a medical professional.
An Ironic Media Production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.